This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
Thinking, not a hard thing to do, but how about undistracted thinking? Paying attention to your thoughts with no interference. Not thinking while doing chores, driving the car, fiddling with a smartphone, just sitting in a room alone, giving full attention to whatever comes to mind. Apparently, for most of us, that's far more difficult than we might imagine. At least that's the implication from a new bit of social psychology research. Two of the scientists who helped design this new study are here to tell us more. What they did, how people reacted, even how some chose seriously unpleasant distractions rather than none at all. Plus some theories on what this might mean for how the human mind is organized. Of course, if you've got thoughts on thinking, you'll be welcome to join in too when we meet up with researchers Tim Wilson and Aaron Westgate right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. We are coming to you today from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, but our call-in number, same as always, 888-967-2825. Easy to remember as 888-WMRA-TALK. The new study, published in the July issue of the journal Science, is titled Just Think, The Challenges of the Disengaged Mind. Two of the social psychologists who helped design and implement the research behind this new report are here with us, both from the University of Virginia. Professor of Psychology, Dr. Tim Wilson, and graduate student Aaron Westlake. Thank you both for making time for us.
Great to be here, Tom.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Aaron, this is not a come down after being on Science Friday a few weeks ago?
No, it's an honor. Virginia's first in my heart.
Okay. Good response. So please, if you would, both of you, describe the basics of your research here. What did you do? What were you looking for? And what did you find out?
Well, Tom, it was a really simple question of that surprisingly, as far as we know, people haven't looked at that much, at least in terms of psychological research, which is how easy is it to just think, sit in a room by yourself with no distractions, no cell phones, no computers, books, and just spend a few minutes trying to enjoy your own thoughts. And so we did a whole series of studies to try to see how easily people could do that and how much they enjoyed it.
Yeah, so what we did was really quite simple. We just brought people into a room and took any distractions away. So like Tim said, no cell phones, no iPods or wallets or watches. And we just asked them to do it. We just asked them to sit in this empty room for 10 to 15 minutes and just think. And we told them to try to entertain themselves with their thoughts, try to have pleasant thoughts and have a good time. And we were really surprised because when we got the results back, people didn't find this as easy as we had expected.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there was some variation. There were a few people who loved it and a few who hated it. But most people were, you know, kind of in the range of, you know, that was not all that great. We know this by, you know, after this so-called thinking period, we came back and just gave them a questionnaire in which they told us how much they had enjoyed this, how bored they were, what they had been thinking about, questions like those. And we kept saying to ourselves, I think Aaron will attest, we had many research meetings where we kept saying, you know, what if we just tried this? Surely that will get people to enjoy this.
Oh, we had so many ideas. If we just let them close their eyes, if we just let them plan what they want to think about. Oh, maybe they're not good at choosing what to think about. Maybe if we give them a list of options and they can just pick one.
Yeah, yeah, and pretty much the same results time after time. We also thought maybe the problem was where they were doing this. It's a little strange to come into a psychology building and be put into this room.
In the basement.
So we did some versions of this that people could do at home. They came in first to get some instructions, and we told them that we would send them an email with a link to a program that they should open only when they felt relaxed and had some time to spare. And they promised that they would put away all their external devices. And they did that, and the computer gave them the same instructions. Just spend a few minutes enjoying your thoughts. And if anything, people enjoyed it a little less at home. They told us afterwards it was not much fun, and a pretty high percentage couldn't do it or didn't do it. They told us afterwards that, yeah, well, I have to admit, I looked at my phone or I grabbed a pen and started doodling. They just couldn't spend that time doing nothing.
And that really surprised me, because we let them do it at home, and we also let them do it at whatever time they wanted to. So they were able to pick what you would think would be the optimal time for sitting and thinking.
Yeah.
Aaron Westlake and Tim Wilson, I'm sure anybody listening who's heard even a little bit about this study already, and it has gotten an amazing amount of international publicity in just the past few weeks, is going to want to know more about people deciding to shock themselves rather than sit alone in a room with their thoughts. And I want to get to that in a little bit. But before we do, Tim Wilson, I got to circle back to something that you said at the outset, that we were, how did you phrase it, sitting around thinking and wondering what would happen if. I realize that part of the job of being a social psychology researcher is to come up with strange conundrums. But I'm curious if you can tell us a little bit more about how you came up with this one, the idea of putting people in a room by themselves with no distractions and asking them to see how they felt when they just sat there and paid attention to what was in their head.
Well, I have to say this is the best part of being a social psychologist is that we get to design studies to try to test these ideas. Sometimes better job, we do a better job than others, but that's the fun is to come up with a question like that. And, we look through the literature to see if anyone else has done something similar. And once we found they hadn't, we said, okay, well, how would we test this? And in this case, it was pretty simple. We found a room that didn't have exciting pictures on the walls, and we came up with a set of procedures that our research assistants followed to run the study. And that's really the fun. Then you sit back and
see what happens.
Yeah. And Tim, you said that no one else had done this type of study. I understand that there have been studies about daydreaming and when people get distracted from whatever they're looking at because there are other thoughts they want to pay attention to. And maybe you can tell us a little bit more about that in a moment. But do I understand that what you're saying is that for some reason you just had this overriding curiosity about what goes on in people's heads?
Yeah, and some social psychologists maybe are better at grand theories, because this was not something where we had a really specific hypothesis to test some theory. It was more in the order of, gosh, I wonder what would happen. We started, just with that very basic question.
Well, for you listening in, I'm curious, when and where do you feel you do your best thinking? In the shower? Driving the highway? Out walking in nature? Someplace else? If you'd be willing to tell us about it, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Dr. Tim Wilson is the Cheryl J. Aston Professor of Psychology at the University of Virginia and lead author of the new report we're discussing. UVA graduate student Aaron Westlake is one of the researchers who helped conduct that study and is among the co-authors of the report published in the journal Science. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Did I mispronounce Aaron's last name?
Maybe a little bit.
So, pronounce
Westgate.
And what have I been saying?
Westlake.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay. For some reason, my name's impossible.
I've got it written down here in my notes as Westgate, but apparently, my thinking process needs some work. Maybe I need to spend more time.
You can come sit
alone
in our room.
In a room. Describe some of who was involved in this study, because it's a typical psychological research. You start with college students, right? But then you went further than that.
Yes. So the initial participants were college students at UVA. And it did occur to us that maybe this is something symptomatic of the younger generation who seems to always have a smartphone at an arm's length. And so we decided to try a study with a more broader population, and we got those people from a couple of places.
Yeah. I remember this one meeting where Tim and I were sitting around the office, and I was saying, man, I wish we could just capture the football stadium and stick 100,000 people in there and ask all of them to do this study. And Tim's like, well,
one at a time, individually.
Well, yes,
no,
all of them, all of them. And Tim's like, well, maybe we could like do a baby version of that. And we started brainstorming, and we realized there's a lot of local churches in the area. There's the Saturday farmers market downtown. And we started reaching out, and we actually wound up recruiting at the local Saturday farmers market here in Charlottesville, and also at the Methodist Church.
Yeah.
The age range ended up being what? 19 or 20?
Yeah, 18 to 77, I think.
77, I think, was our oldest person.
And you didn't find much difference between age range?
No, we didn't. Now, admittedly, this was a fairly small sample, about 60 people altogether. And this was the version they did at home. So they got our email with a link in it and opened this up at a time of their choosing when got the same instructions to put everything aside and spend 10 or 15 minutes alone with their thoughts. And pretty much the same results. And I think it was about half the people who reported they couldn't do it or didn't do it.
They cheated.
Yeah, that they looked at their phones or something. And if you look at how much they said they enjoyed it, that was not correlated with their level of education, their age. It was somewhat to our surprise.
Yeah,
what
I was
do you
really surprised.
Suspect is going on here? Why is it that people have trouble sitting alone for anywhere from 6 to 15 minutes, just paying attention to their thoughts with no distractions?
Well, that's the hardest question of all, I think, Tom. You know, we're still working on. But you know, I think the human brain evolved to engage in the world. Just like any mammal, we're built to look outwards and search the environment for opportunities and to avoid dangers. And we humans, of course, have this extra ability to shut out the world and just focus inwards. But it may be it's just not that highly developed that the mind still wants to look outwards and gets a little uncomfortable when there's nothing to find or no opportunity to engage in the world.
Yeah, you can imagine that if our ancestors spent all their time looking inward, they would have gotten eaten by a lion or something very early on. So it may just not be in our evolutionary history to close out the world and focus on our thoughts.
So research psychologists, we got to ask you this question. Did you try this yourselves? And if you did, what kind of results did you get for yourself?
Well, we definitely have. And, you know, we try to use ourselves as our own participants as much as possible. You know, I have to say it's one reason I was surprised because I think I'll let Aaron speak for herself, but I think I don't find this that difficult, at least for very short periods of time. So times I find myself doing it are if I'm having trouble sleeping at night or I am stuck in a traffic jam and I could choose to fume about why the cars won't move, or I could
But traffic jam doesn't really qualify for being someplace with no distractions.
True, that's a good point. You know, I think you could shut your eyes, at least for a short time.
Not too long, I hope.
Not while you're moving. But you know, I find myself that it, particularly if I have topics that I kind of develop over time, it's sort of fun. So, you know, go back to my high school sports career and imagine being in a baseball game again, or to imagine myself hiking the Appalachian Trail. You know, there's all sorts of things you can think about, at least for short periods of time.
Okay, Aaron, you're a little bit younger than Tim is.
Tim's putting me to shame.
You might say a different generation as well. So we'll have to get your answer to that question when we continue. Social psychologist Tim Wilson and Aaron Westgate are our guests. The new study they helped co-author is published in the journal Science, titled Just Think, The Challenges of the Disengaged Mind. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We're going to get Aaron's take on the last question, and then we're going to get to, I believe it's Peter in Charlottesville, will be our first call when we get back in a bit more than 1 minute. So to you who are listening, does the idea of sitting alone in a room with absolutely no distractions sound enticing to you? Or does it seem like it would be really, really unpleasant? Got ideas of your own? Why so many people found such a thing so difficult? On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Social psychologists Aaron Westgate and Tim Wilson are our guests. So, Aaron, did you do the experiment yourself?
I did. And Tim's putting me to shame because he has a very easy time, in my opinion, doing this, and I am terrible at it. I have a really, really hard time just sitting and entertaining myself with my own thoughts when there's nothing else going on. I've gotten better. When I'm walking now, I can start to do it, or Tim always tells me to try it when I'm in the gym, and that helps. But just sitting and having nothing on, like at night when you're going to bed, or, you know, I've actually run through this, had my research assistants run us through the study. So I've actually sat in that room where the participants sit. And after about 30 seconds, I'm done.
What are you experiencing while you're in that room by yourself, no distractions?
You know, for the first 10 to 15 seconds, it's great because I'm like, oh, I could think about this and this and this. And then I start thinking about it. And then I'm like, okay, I'm done. And then I look at the wall. And then I look at the computer. And then it's like I just look at everything in the room one after another and just think, man, this is boring. Let me try to think again. Nope, not happening. And it becomes a pretty, it's not painful, it's not awful, but it's pretty bleh. It's pretty unpleasant. It's not enjoyable. And I start thinking about all the other things I could possibly be doing other than being stuck in this room with my own thoughts.
First call coming in from Charlottesville. Peter, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Tim Wilson and or Aaron Westgate, please.
The host asked under what circumstances you found it really comfortable to be sitting with your own thoughts and having creative ideas or whatever. And I just remember after doing physical activity, playing tennis or squash and being tired and not really wanting to do anything physical and just sit, and I would get rid of all the biases I have in my head, and I could sit and think about work I was doing or friends and what they might be doing or planning upcoming adventures, etc. But I think that just being a little bit physically tired and not really having that desire to go off and do something, I find it really comfortable sitting and contemplating ideas. I'm surprised so many people find that difficult. But I do live alone, and I spend a lot of time in my own thoughts anyway, or while doing housework or chores or cooking or whatever. But I don't find it very difficult at all to spend relatively long periods of time, measured in tens of minutes, just in my own thoughts.
Well, that's a really interesting, Peter, and I have to say that's a variation we haven't tried of making people exhaust themselves.
Yeah.
I think my hunch would have been a little different, that if people are really tired, they might get more frustrated. But who knows? Maybe we should try it.
You know, there is some research that physical activity shuts down parts of the frontal cortex related to anxiety and negative thought.
Mm-hmm,
So maybe there's something liberating in that.
Yeah, good.
Peter, they've got a whole new aspect to study
there
because
you go.
Thanks so much for your call. I think our next call is coming in from Whitehall. This is Anne. Anne, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, hello. My comment is, I was reading a long time ago James Herriot, the Scottish vet's book, All Creatures Great and Small, and he got to a farmhouse late at night. It was after dinner, and to get to the front door, he had to walk by the window to the living room or parlor, I suppose. And the two brothers were sitting on a bench against the wall smoking their pipes, and the sister was sitting in a chair in front of the fireplace. And that's what they were doing. They were sitting. Nobody was knitting. Nobody was talking. Nobody was reading. And I thought, when is the last time, if ever, that I can remember seeing people just sitting, not waiting for a bus, just like at home, just sitting? And actually, I couldn't recall it at all.
That's really interesting. And I entertain myself when I travel of taking note of that, say, in airports. So I happened to be in the Charlotte, North Carolina airport recently where they have a whole row of rocking chairs set up where people can sit. And I just counted out of maybe 40 or so how many people were just sitting there doing nothing as opposed to reading or listening to music. And I think it was one person who was just sitting there.
Oh, my gosh.
You'll think this is related. But my daughter and I were lucky enough to be sitting on a bench on a bridge on the River Seine in Paris. And it was wintertime, so the tourist boat came under, and there were very few people on it, a couple of dozen, because it was winter. And every single one of them, without fail, had a iPhone or a camera held, you know, however far you hold that, in front of your face. And they were taking pictures, and here they were, the Louvre's on one side, Notre Dame's on the other side. There's the Eiffel Tower. And not one person was actually being there where they were, but they were recording it for, I don't know who, for someone. So,
interesting.
You know, it is maybe it's not something that we value. Maybe it's something that we've gotten out of the practice of just doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, thank you so very much for your call. And Anne raises a point that I understand the two of you hear a lot. Do you suppose that the results of this study indicate something about how technology dependent we've become, whether it's a TV screen or a smartphone screen or something else? And the answers I've heard from the two of you in the past is not necessarily.
Well,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, go on.
Well, the little bit of data we have suggests not. So we've asked people how often they use smartphones and social media, and that does not predict how much they enjoy our studies. But I think that question deserves further study, because my hunch is it's kind of circular, that one reason devices are so attractive to us is precisely because it's not easy to just be alone with our thoughts, so we gravitate towards them. But because they're there, we don't get as much practice with this kind of thinking. So it may be kind of circular.
Yeah, and even though we did ask people, almost everyone used their cell phones and technology quite a bit. So
yeah.
It might be very different in a group that's not as familiar with it or doesn't have as much experience.
But if I understand what you were just saying, Tim, is that the people who did not have smartphones and told you that they didn't pay much attention to that kind of technology in their day-to-day life, they were just as unhappy sitting in a room alone for 15 minutes trying to pay attention to their thoughts as anybody else.
Yes, but as Aaron points out, we didn't have a wide range of experience. And most people had phones of some sort. And,
yeah, these
and
were
did
all
use them.
Adults in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
And they were pretty experienced with technology.
Doctoral candidate in social psychology at the University of Virginia, Aaron Westgate, is one of our guests. Sitting beside her, UVA professor of psychology, Tim Wilson. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We've got some lines open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Before we get to our next call, we got to get you two to tell us about the people who had the opportunity to shock themselves rather than just sit alone with their thoughts.
Well, the more studies we did, finding that people reported that they didn't enjoy this so much, the more we began to wonder, well, is it possible that this is so boring that people would actually prefer some sort of negative stimulus? And so we designed this study to find out, and we were fortunate to have a colleague at UVA who has an electric shock apparatus in his lab across the hall from us, and he generously lent us his lab so we could bring people in and put some electrodes on their ankle. And we first asked everyone to take a sample shock if they were willing to do so. And I should say, this is not like putting your finger on a light socket. I mean, it's like an extreme static shock.
Yes, it's not pleasant, but it's not painful. It's not acting like.
Yeah, I mean, here again, we used ourselves as participants. We all hooked ourselves up.
Yes, we did.
And shocked ourselves. And, you know, it's not much fun, but it's not extreme. It's not excruciating. So all our participants...
But it's not something you normally would choose
no.
to Oh, do. Never, no. never, never. We didn't go back and do it again after we tested it.
And in fact, most of our participants said this was unpleasant, and we told us... we asked them, if we gave you $5, how much, if anything, would you pay us not to have to get this shock again? And most people said at least a dollar or two that it was that unpleasant. So then you want to describe the next part of the study, Aaron?
So, yeah, we said, that's great. For the next 10 to 20 minutes, we just want you to sit here and entertain yourself with your thoughts. Try to have a pleasant time. You can't get up. You can't fall asleep. But if you want, there is a button right here, and you can press the button and shock yourself again at any time during this 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, we really tried to emphasize that the goal was to entertain themselves with
yes.
their thoughts, and the shock apparatus just happened to still be there. So we tried to reduce any pressure to shock themselves.
I think they got that.
Well, it's funny. We sat around, and I think some of us in the lab thought, why are we wasting our time doing this? No one's going to do this.
Why?
But many did, and especially men. About two-thirds of the men gave themselves at least one shock, and a quarter of the women did.
Which I was really surprised. I thought maybe a few people would do it, but that blew me away.
Yeah, so you're a social psychologist. What's your theory on why men would rather shock themselves than sit with their thoughts much more than women?
Well, it's a bit of a puzzle because in all of our other studies, we don't find a gender difference in how much people say they enjoy it. And men and women are equally bored by this task.
So it's not like women are just having an easier time thinking than men are.
Right.
Thank you for saying that.
There is some evidence that men are higher in what's called sensation seeking, the ability the desire to try new experiences, and perhaps that explains it.
There's also the theory, I guess, we've talked about women just being better psychology participants.
Yeah, I think maybe they were trying to be more cooperative I remember one woman who told us that she kind of wanted to shock herself, but she
knew she wasn't supposed to.
Right,
so
she held off. Yeah.
Yes, she was trying to be good and not shock herself.
Next to Lexington, Kent, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for social psychology researchers Tim Wilson and or Aaron Westgate, please.
My comment is that the essence of self-hypnosis and meditation is being alone with one's thoughts. I am a licensed professional counselor, and I do a considerable amount of hypnosis. And part of what I do is to train people in the skill of self-hypnosis, and I think it can be learned. Some people are better at it than others, of course, but most people can learn to put themselves into a state of self-hypnosis where they are alone with their thoughts, and they enjoy it and find it very pleasurable and relaxing.
Well, that's an interesting comment, Ken, because we do find a very slight but significant correlation between people's experience with meditation and how much they enjoy our studies. In other words, those who have some experience enjoy it a little bit more. But most forms of meditation, the goal is to quiet the mind, to notice thoughts but not dwell on them, let them float by. And our goal was a little bit different, to see if people could fill up their minds with thoughts. And so I think there's plenty of evidence that meditation is beneficial, and learning to do it is enjoyable. But it's not easy to do, I don't think. And our task of filling up the mind appears to be no easier.
We thought it might be, but it's not.
Yeah.
Kent, thanks for your call. Next to Kathy in Forestville. Thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you doing? I was, listening to the pillows about this show and going, oh, there's no way. That's why I have a radio in every room so I can listen to you guys and not listen to my own thoughts. And this morning, nobody has had a perfect life. Nobody has done everything the way they wanted it, the outcomes are not there. So a lot of times those thoughts will come, well, if I hadn't done this or if I had just only done that, different. They'll come and they'll be, 20, 30 years old. And I was going, I wish there was a way that I could forget my past, but I don't want to forget my past. I just want to stuff it inside of my brain somewhere that I don't have to, it doesn't come popping out at me unexpectedly with me going, oh, crap, I don't want to think about that.
Well, Kathy, you raise a really good point, because I understand, Tim Wilson, that you did do sort of personality surveys with your subjects, and you got, as you would expect, a wide range from these close to 800 people over 2 years that you tested. But is there any correlation between people who had a more negative self-image or more likely to engage in negative thoughts about themselves? And how the study turned out?
Well, we find some small but reliable correlations. So one is between a depression symptom checklist, that people who rate themselves as a little depressed predictably don't do as well in our thinking situation. But I guess what strikes me more is that we haven't yet identified one personality variable that is a really good predictor of this. But Kathy's point, I think, is it does touch on, there is a theory in social psychology that talks about the curse of the self, that we naturally gravitate towards all our shortcomings when we think. And that is one possible explanation of our results. And indeed, we do find that the people who enjoy this more tend to focus a little more on the future, not so much on their past. So maybe that's a way to possibly train people to do this a little better.
And they also think more about other people.
Yeah.
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 But you told us that when you were trying this for yourself, Aaron Westgate, that it wasn't that you were having negative thoughts that made it so onerous. It's just you thought it was boring?
I think I thought it was boring because I couldn't do it. I think if I were able to do it and be successful at it and actually be able to sustain these thoughts. Like, I have a scenario where I try to imagine myself floating on a raft in the Pacific Ocean, for instance. And it's really wonderful while I can do it. But after those 10 to 15 seconds, it's almost like the effort just gets too big and I can't do it anymore. And then I'm just sitting there and I get bored.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a real key to this, possibly, is it's hard to do deliberately.
Yes.
I mean, all of us at times have pleasant thoughts and daydreams that kind of pop in our minds spontaneously. What's different about our studies is people just have to do this kind of on command, you know, on the spot. And I think that's what is difficult.
Yes, that's
right. But
really
Tim Wilson,
hard.
You say that you find it relatively easy.
Well, for sure,
relatively
for sure periods of time. Let's not exaggerate here.
Is there a generational difference? I know that you didn't find it in your study, but
yeah.
Is it just that you've got a couple more decades of things to look back over in your past and think about, and Aaron doesn't have nearly as many?
Well, thanks for being generous with a couple of time, but you know, I'm an optimist here. I'm convinced that we can find a way for everyone to do this a little easier, and it might just be practice, you know, not age as much as I've tried this more, so I would encourage Aaron to keep trying.
I would say it's easier now than it was when I came to UVA 2 years ago, so there's hope.
So if it's not too personal a question to you who are listening, how much do you like to be alone by yourself? Do you see yourself as different in that way from other people? Have ideas on how people might enjoy themselves more while paying attention to their thoughts? 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember our phone number. But if you prefer all numbers, 888-967-2825. You can also post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we'll be back in a bit more than 1 minute. Aaron Westgate has been studying social psychology for quite a bit longer than most of her contemporaries. Word is that when Aaron was just 11 years old and her mother had gone back to graduate school, Aaron used to steal her mom's psychology textbooks and run off and read them. Close to a decade and a half later, the fascination with psychology research continues. As a graduate student herself now at the University of Virginia, Ms. Westgate is one of the co-authors of the new study we've been discussing. Dr. Tim Wilson is lead author of that new study. By the way, Professor Wilson's most recent book is titled Redirect, The Surprising New Science of Psychological Change. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We're going next to Charlottesville. Cal, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Yes, I was curious. It doesn't, you know, everybody's been voluntary in this. I was wondering if it you could apply this, or in the future, talk to prisoners who were forced into situations where they are alone with their thoughts.
Well, that's a really interesting point, Cal, because as you may know, there have been some studies of solitary confinement. And it turns out it's one of the worst things you can do to people that for a lot of reasons. I think it's the absence of social interactions. Many countries have banned it. The United States is one of the few that still does it to a large degree. But I think you're correct that one reason it's so terrible is precisely because of how difficult it is to use one's own mind solely to occupy oneself. I mean, if people in our studies find it difficult for 10 or 15 minutes, imagine having to do it for days or months or years.
Right. It seems like it would be a little maddening, I guess.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Cal, thank you so much for your call. Next call is coming in from Bath. Mary, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please.
Good afternoon. I was wondering about Quaker silent worship, where people sit for an hour. And a good deal of that time is working with your thoughts. And it's a very pleasant activity.
Well, interesting that you give that example, Mary, because I actually have a background in the Society of Friends. I went to a Quaker high school and have sat through many meetings for worship. And maybe that's why I can do this a little better. I have more practice. Although I have to tell you, when I was in junior high, I occupied the time with my best friend and I would place bets as to how many people were going to talk during the meeting.
So we were
perhaps not the best participants. But but it is also, I think, one reason. It is a group setting, and there are things to look at. You're not by yourself. But I take your point that it is time to practice this experience.
And then every morning I get up and sit with a cup of coffee and just enjoy being there and thoughts come through and so forth. But then again, I don't have smartphones and all that stuff, and I'm not a huge talker, and I enjoy just being quiet.
Mary, I'm curious, when you're enjoying that cup of coffee, are you looking out a window?
Looking out a window?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So that really wouldn't qualify for this study that you were doing, where people were sitting alone in a room with no distractions, coffee or otherwise.
Gotcha.
Well, I think it does speak to what you were saying earlier, Tim Wilson, doesn't it? That you see the human mind as designed to be engaging with the world. And that's what Mary's doing when she's looking out her window and enjoying her coffee.
Yes, and we've had this working hypothesis that maybe thinking is easier if the mind has a little something to do, like looking out a window or while you're walking. And we haven't been able to find much support for that yet, but it seems like that's true.
Yeah,
well,
like
I know when I'm walking,
just
that's
lock
definitely
on.
Something that is very pleasurable. When I taught school, I used to take a good long walk when I had some problems or what to do, and definitely that, something would come that was the right answer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mary, thanks so much for your call. If you listening have a question or comment for our researchers, social psychology researchers, Aaron Westgate, Tim Wilson, both from the University of Virginia, we've got a few more minutes to take calls. Easy way to remember our phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK. That translates in all numbers to 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we have this on our Facebook page from Charlotte, who says, I'm wondering if introverts have any easier of a time than extroverts being alone with their thoughts.
You know, we tested that.
Yeah, we did. And good question. We actually anticipated that it would, but we don't have much support for it. That's one of the personality variables that we have asked, and not much correlation.
Which is really surprising still to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the things that you said a little bit ago, Tim Wilson, is that you think future research may lead, if I caught this correctly, to ways that will help people be able to be alone with their thoughts more easily, to enjoy it more, to participate in this kind of experiment and do just fine at it. Why do you think that's worth doing?
Well, good question. And yes, we are optimists here. We keep trying new variations, hoping that this will that people will find it easier. And I do think there's some benefit to this. I think our last caller, Mary, alluded to this of times to find have a just a peaceful experience or solve problems. And you know, there's plenty of opportunities during our days when we're experiencing some stress that maybe just this ability to retreat into our own minds for a few minutes to reduce stress. And we've uncovered a little bit of evidence for this from other researchers.
Yes, so there's some evidence that it can reduce pain in people who were putting their hands in a bucket of ice water. Mm-hmm. So if they were able to fantasize about some pleasant thoughts, they felt like it was less painful. And there's also some evidence that it can help with insomnia.
Yes, we came across one study that looked at people who had pretty serious insomnia, and they were instructed to try to distract themselves as they were falling asleep by just thinking pleasant thoughts. And, you know, one might think they would have hit upon this strategy on their own, but,
yes,
but apparently they didn't, because the people given those instructions got to sleep more quickly than those who did not get them.
So as scientists, I'm going to ask you to do something that I know that you love to do, and that is to wildly speculate. Since this study involved hundreds of people, it was done in Charlottesville. It was either college students from the University of Virginia or people who lived in and around Charlottesville. Can you jump to a conclusion about whether this would be the same any place else in the country, any place else in the world?
Well, Tom, I have to point out that Charlottesville was just voted the number one city in the world in terms of happiness. So if Charlottesville residents can't
do it, then who can?
It's a good question.
I'm sorry, we forgot our laugh track.
We don't know. Someone who grows up in a East Asian culture perhaps has more experience with Buddhist traditions and mindfulness. We don't know.
It's a good question. I'm inclined to say no. I think some hint of something would have come up by now if there was some huge difference we were going to find. I think this is partly just part of being human, is that this is hard.
Yeah.
Well, there certainly are people listening who have been to other places in the world, including some fairly impoverished places in the world where there is no easy access to technology like smartphones or televisions or even radios. And if you're that person and you have a thought on whether this kind of effort, sitting alone with your thoughts with no distractions, would be any easier for people in that part of the world than it is here in our part of the world, we've got just a couple more minutes to take calls at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825.
Tom, I'll point out, too, that if you read some of the great thinkers across the ages, doesn't seem to be an entirely new problem. That often people complain, I'll probably butcher this Pascal quote, but that all the troubles of person kind can be traced back to the inability of a man to sit in a room by himself and think.
Yes, I love that quote.
So,
do you suspect, Aaron Westgate, that people in their 20s and even younger have more of an urge to be hanging out with other human beings than oldsters like myself and maybe even Tim do? Is that a factor?
I don't know. I think, you know, there's definitely more structured opportunity to do so in college and in high school, where you are physically with a lot of people of your same age. Whether that contributes to an inability to think?
Well, when you were talking earlier about your experience trying to do this experiment on your own, and talking about how bored you got. But also, I think you said, thinking to yourself, I could be doing so many other things right now. Was one of the things you found yourself yearning for was connection with other human beings?
Not for me so much, but again, I'm an introvert. I'm not a big people person necessarily. And I actually have other friends my age who love this study. I have a friend, Robert, at home, who I always use as a guinea pig when we run a new version of this, actually. And I have him try it out because he loves the thinking period. Exact same age, born the day before me.
Well, that's such a great point, because although we've been talking about the fact that the majority of people really dislike this and some people really, really hated it, there was a continuum, Tim Wilson. There were some people who enjoyed it. What can you tell us about those weirdos?
Definitely. And, not much, because, we tried putting in, as we said, a bunch of personality measures. And I think we had some of the same hunches as others of it must be the introverts or...
But, neurotic people.
We find these small associations with various personality measures. But there's one scale called need for cognition, which basically just measures how much people like to think.
And people who like to think more. So it's not
the most earth-shattering
finding. The smoking gun,
yeah.
So I realize that I am in no way typical, and you haven't had a chance yet to do any personality tests on me, though I think it would be fascinating once you did. But I got to tell you, I experimented with this last night. I only set a timer for about 10 minutes, and I really liked doing it, just sitting alone. Now, I have a fairly new home that I moved into a few weeks ago out in the country. But I forced myself, well, it was dark enough out that I really couldn't see out the window anyways, but I turned away from the window and the beautiful view, and just sitting there with my thoughts just felt like a really peaceful, nice thing to do. And again, I'm a weirdo, all right? But I would expect that many people who've been listening to this, if they haven't tried it themselves yet, may have the reaction of, my life is so busy, this sounds wonderful. Having 10 or 15 minutes with no distractions where I don't have to deal with the kids or my boss or problems other than what I just pay attention to in my head.
Well, when we go off the air, we'll give you the personality test. But I would encourage everyone to try it. And maybe, I think some people do enjoy it, but maybe some who think it's enjoyable, not as much as they think.
Yes, I think some people are surprised by how hard it is when they actually do sit down and give it a shot. 10 minutes is a long time.
And I don't have a smartphone, so, I'm a Luddite that way, too. What's next? What kind of research are you pursuing after this?
Well, as I said before, Tom, I continue to be an optimist, maybe unwisely so, but we keep having the research meetings where we say, if only we try this, it will get people to enjoy it. And one thing is giving people a slight distraction, something little to latch onto. That's a hypothesis we want to keep testing. So we're still trying.
Yeah, we know people can like it. We have people like you, at least one or two, in every single one of our studies that say, this was great. This was the best thing that's happened all day. And something is letting them enjoy it.
I have a note to myself to try to make time to ask you this if we had time, and we don't have any other calls coming in right at the moment. So maybe we do have time. Aaron Westgate, I understand that in the other studies that you're working on, the other research that you're working on, one area is called productive procrastination.
Yes, I'm an expert on that.
Can you tell us what that is? Maybe there's, hope, optimism just in that phrase.
Yes, it's the idea that sometimes when we procrastinate, we do something bad instead. Instead of working on our homework, we watch television. But sometimes when we procrastinate, we substitute that by doing something else that's positive. So instead of working on programming the next survey for our psychology research, we work on reading a new research article instead, for instance. And the research I've done so far suggests that that kind of substitution is not bad. Those people do just as well or even better than people that do not procrastinate at all. So,
any thoughts on productive
Sounds
procrastination.
Great.
I have trouble saying it with a straight face.
Yeah, I think maybe we should combine these research programs and get the people to just do nothing for 5 minutes. And see what that does. But no, it's really interesting.
So, Tim Wilson, I'm sure there is at least one person listening who is saying to themselves, I can see how sitting alone with my thoughts with no distractions is a difficult thing. I'd like to get better at it. Any suggestions for how they could proceed in that direction?
Well, I would suggest picking some topics and sticking with them. That's worked for me, at least, is to, if you're going to hike the Appalachian Trail in your head, go to a mile marker one day and pick it up there the next day. Or if you're going to be on a desert island, it's easier to sort of pick up a line of thought than reinvent every single time. So just keep practicing.
Well, if you listening try it, please do let us know how it works out. Our guests have been Tim Wilson, the Aston Professor of Psychology at the University of Virginia, and Aaron Westgate, a graduate student in social psychology at UVA. Their new study, published in the journal Science, is titled Just Think: The Challenges of the Disengaged Mind. Aaron, Tim, thank you both so very much for making time for us.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Podcasts of this program are available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will see links to more information about the work that Dr. Wilson and Ms. Westgate are doing, as well as links to the new study that we have been discussing. Virginia Insight's executive producer, Matt Bingay, Dan Easley, our technical director, associate producers, Bob Levicky and Terry Ward. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Elliot Majerzik, and Andrew Windham at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.